Another shooting horrifies the country. Does the fault lie with the gun or the shooter? Depends on who you ask. Another American icon passes away. Jesse Jackson remembered today across the country as he dies today at age 84. And another search is planned for Isadora as we all try to figure out why bail was an option for the accused murderer. Good morning, my friend. Good to be with you here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. The calm before the storm, I guess. The further south you go, the further better it gets, apparently. And we are supposedly, at least Dino says, as far as the storm track that he's picking up on right now, we should escape the worst of it. Thankful for that. But if you're listening in the northern end of the valley, as I said, the further south you get, the better. Further north you go, the worst. Could be a 6 to 10 inch snowstorm. And we don't have many of those anymore. I remember growing up, I grew up around the St. Cloud, Minnesota area. And it seems to me like, I don't know, 2-3 times every winter we had a foot, 18 inches of snow, and, you know, a lot of 5 to 6 inch snowfalls. Now, we might be living in a little drier place than central Minnesota, but not that much. And actually, my wife said to me last night, she said, you know, I could go for a good 2-foot snowstorm that just shuts the town down for a couple of days. And I said, you know, that does sound pretty good. Stay home, watch movies, pop a pizza in the oven, hunker down for a couple of days, catch up on our sleep. Doesn't sound all that bad. Except, as we all know, yours truly and everybody here would have to get to work anyway. There are no snow days around here. Glad to have you with me here on the show. A beautiful start to the day. We'll get some details on that impending weather system coming up here in just a few minutes. Again, today I look at you at the beginning of the show and say, I don't know how we're going to get to all this in 2 hours, but we're going to give it a go. A couple of guests today. Jeff Bradall is going to be with us. Jeff, noted defense attorney here in town. He's going to help me, hopefully, answer the question of why Joshua Height was allowed to even have the option to post bail. I do not understand this, and hopefully Jeff can help me. Says he can, so that's good. Alex Bloss will be here. Alex, the a GOP candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. He'll run against Julie Fedorchuk and possibly others in the Republican primary, so he'll be here in the 10 o'clock hour. We have another shooting to talk about where a transgender individual is at the heart of the story. This is one of those, to me, two things can be true at the same time kind of a story. So we'll talk about what does this mean and what does it not. We'll do that here today. We're going to talk about a school walkout yesterday in Burnsville, Minnesota, at a middle school. How many times in middle school do you remember being so incensed by the politics of the day that you felt like, I want to skip school and make my voice heard? What are we doing to our kids? And in Best Thing I Heard All Day, Tom Homan was on Fox and Friends on Sunday morning, and I didn't hear it until yesterday, but he dropped a number that should make every one of us salute and say, way to go, Tom. So we're going to play that for you. Best Thing I Heard All Day, and again, what does it mean? I like to try to ask that question. There's a lot of stuff that happens, and I like to try to say, well, what does this mean? Like, does it really matter? Because there's a lot of stuff that I guess it's okay to know, but there's some stuff that you really should know that you need to know. So we'll try to dig into all that coming up here today on the show. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. You can also email studio@flagfamily.com. You can text me 701-237-1590. As I come to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, 15 minutes or less. You can sign all the paperwork they got for you to drive away in a beautiful new or spiffy pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. So let's get to it, starting with the almanac here as we begin our morning wire. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on what is going on in the world as we know it right now. Start with the almanac for today. We will gain 3 minutes and 10 seconds of daylight today. How great is that? Central time zone, at least here in Fargo, 5:55 will be sunset today. And just about 4 days away from the spot at which we will have sunset after 6 o'clock. Wonderful. The stock market is back in action after taking yesterday off for President's Day, which, honestly, I don't even know if we need President's Day as a holiday. Do you think we need President's Day as a holiday? It just seems like it's the holiday that nobody remembers, and we don't even really know what it's all about, and we don't celebrate it like we talk about some of the other holidays, you know, look back at famous things of the past. Maybe we should, but we really don't. So I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't feel like any different than yesterday. But the markets are back open today. The Dow is down 238, NASDAQ down 263, S&P 500 down 51, back where we finished off last week. A slide in the market. WTI crude oil down another 50 cents at 62.57. As you heard Julie Fedorchuk, our congresswoman, say last week, that 65 to 70 is kind of a sweet spot where we get low gas prices and it's still good for the state economy. So we're under that as we talk to you here this morning. Gold today down $163 an ounce, silver down $5.31 an ounce, and Bitcoin today down $1,200, about 67 thousand right now on Bitcoin price. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $2.91. That's down one penny from yesterday. North Dakota average price $2.52, Minnesota $2.57, South Dakota $2.58, and diesel fuel today $3.65 a gallon. All right, what's going on in the news today? Well, the country today is taking a moment to remember the civil rights icon, Jesse Jackson, two-time presidential candidate, passed away this morning at age 84, died after a long battle with a rare neurological disorder. I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but it's a palsy of one sort or another. He was in the national spotlight for about 60 years, started out as kind of a protege of Dr. King to the head of the Rainbow Coalition. And President Trump sent out, I thought, a very gracious and classy message today, among other tributes coming in for the late Jesse Jackson. Well, NDSU is needing a new school president, as you probably know. The application deadline closed yesterday, or was yesterday, at 5 p.m., and Forum reports today that more than 40 high-level candidates are vying for the position. There are some sitting university presidents, provosts, and several leaders from the private sector as well, who are eager to lead the school. It's the state's largest land-grant institute, actually probably the only one, as I'm thinking about that there. They are hoping to start interviews in early March and have a final selection by the end of March. Law enforcement has scheduled a massive community search today in Battle Lake for 25-year-old Isadora Wengel, who's been missing since late December. Her boyfriend, Josh Height, as you probably know by now, has been arrested and charged with her murder and evidence tampering, even though they have not yet found the body. So they're still looking for that black 27-gallon tote with a red lid. And that's about all I want to say about that story. You probably heard the details, and yeah. What else is going on? Amy Klobuchar visited Moorhead yesterday. Talked with the people gathered there. Forum says that there was a group of residents that turned out there, and I didn't see any accounts or any depictions of how many, but I'm guessing in Moorhead she probably drew a fairly good crowd there. She met with people to discuss the unpredictable and chaotic, as she called it, impact of the federal baseline tariffs. I saw a couple of sound bites from that last night. I just wonder what they're leaning on. If the senator who hopes to be the governor of Minnesota is talking about how disruptive and how damaging the tariffs were, if the worst they have is unpredictable and chaotic, that's not necessarily bad. Sometimes those things are good. But she says it's a direct threat to the regional supply chain, noting that Canada remains Minnesota's top trading partner. So there you go on that. Ag leaders across Minnesota are warning of a potential catastrophe, as they call it, as the ICE and Border Patrol efforts are reaching into Minnesota's dairy and crop farms. They say that it could be very difficult to find enough workers there. And they say that we could see some crop sales dropping by as much as 70% if we don't have that labor gap addressed. And the FBI has officially denied the Minnesota Bureau of criminal apprehensions request for evidence in the shooting death of Alex Preddy, who was killed by Border Patrol agents last month. Those are some of the stories making headlines for you here on this Tuesday morning. When we come back, story of the day. Three people are dead. A transgender male turned female pulled the trigger. What does it mean and what does it not? That's next. If you need a new garage door or fast, reliable repairs, OnTrack Garage Doors got you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs. OnTrack Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values. Quality work, honest service, and a team you can trust. Let them get you on the right track with OnTrack. Call them at 701-793-4246 today. Thank you to my friend Tim Flackle, Cass County Commissioner, who pings me quickly and says, Steve, just an FYI, the five tribal colleges in North Dakota are also land-grant colleges. Okay, thanks. So it's not just NDSU. There are six altogether with the five tribal colleges. Thank you, Commissioner, for the help on that story there. 701-271-1100. What do you make of this story last night from the shooting at the hockey rink in Rhode Island? Depending on where you get your news, the death of these three people might be reported in a number of different ways. The story is that the 56-year-old man, reportedly wearing a dress, shot four of his family members and a family friend at a high school hockey game last night. Police say Robert Dorgan, who identifies as a Latina female by the name of Roberta Esposito, killed the mother of his children and one of their kids before taking his own life. Some reports say that a man shot some people, then took his own life. Some say a woman shot some people. Very few are talking much about the disposition of the shooter. But one local TV station reported what most would not. The man in 2020 went to a clinic for a sex change surgery and had struggled with gender identification ever since. His family had been increasingly concerned with his mental health. If you are like me, you say to yourself at times like this, two things can be true. One, transgender people are people that God loves very much. And while they are all struggling with some sort of psychological issue, they are not all murderers. At the same time, you're insulting the intelligence of everyone, including yourself, if you don't acknowledge that we are seeing a sharp increase in murders committed by men who either want to be women or who have taken drugs or surgeries to get there. Some statistics that I found this morning, I like to do that when I have something that's kind of percolating in my mind, like, okay, what's going on? What's behind this here? I like to find statistics. And I give an assist here to Tyler Durden, who operates the website Zero Hedge. And he wrote, transgenderism is a clear and undeniable mental illness, often coupled with narcissism and elements of sociopathy. Studies show that up to 50% of transgenders have been prescribed psychotropic medications at least once, while 75% receive some form of psychotherapy. Around 80% of trans patients have been diagnosed with secondary disorders and a high rate of narcissism. There have been no significant studies beyond the 2011 Swedish cohort study on transgender criminality, and no significant studies on their likelihood of violence. This is largely due to the political stigma attached to any objective analysis that might paint transgenderism in a negative light. Just as the progressive media often tries to hide the trans identity of criminal suspects, the psychological community is also politically motivated to hide the unhinged nature of gender dysphoria. This lack of serious investigation needs to change before trans-perpetrated killings become an epidemic. I think that there are some things here that we need to talk about. I did kind of a fact check on the numbers there, and I said, okay, and I go to Gemini for most of my stuff, point out to me what's been found about this 50 to 75% figure about psychotropic medications and psychotherapy. Gemini says this is generally accurate. There was also a 2024 study published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine that found that transgender youth were prescribed psychotropic medications, this is your antidepressants, antidepressants, anti-anxiety, at more than double the rate of straight kids. Other data from the American Journal of Psychiatry shows that transgender individuals are roughly six times more likely to visit a mental health care provider for mood or anxiety disorders, six times more likely than the general population. Okay, so this checks out. 50 to 75%. That's helpful to know because you're going to end up in a conversation likely with someone who says, oh, no, this is just you making things up. Okay, well, here you've got some data on this. The one that jumped out to me was 80% with a secondary disorder. And this stems from a 2014 study that was done called The Frequency of Personality Disorders in Patients with Gender Identity Disorders. And they did find, this was a study done internationally, that 81.4% of participants met the criteria for at least one personality disorder. In addition to the gender dysphoria, there's one other personality disorder. So what do we make of all this? Again, I will say that you can have multiple things going on at the same time. And like I talked about last week when we talked about the Somali community, we have to understand that we cannot lump all people together and make wide sweeping statements and generalize people. It's just, it's foolish, first of all. It's not accurate, and I don't think that's how God looks at people, too. But we also have to say, look, there's something here, and there is something here. No question about this. Now, does this mean that we want to start shooting everybody that talks about transgender surgery? No, it doesn't mean that. But it does mean that we need our friends on the other side of this debate to stop insulting our intelligence by saying, there's nothing going on here. This is fine. If we want to change the sexes of nine-year-old little girls, no problem at all. We need to do better than this. And we need to have a more honest conversation because my belief is that we need to get to the root of what's happening with this particular situation and this particular group of people, how it's happening, why it's happening, and what can we do in these cases to give people the help that they need to move through this, because they're clearly affected in most cases by multiple things. And most of them have had treatment, or many of them have had treatment. And so let's talk about that and how to do that as good as we possibly can. All right, 27 past the hour. Addison, give me a heads up here. Do we want to try to sneak in this update here, or we maybe want to do this in a little bit? Okay. We've got Dean just sent an update over. Dean's tied up with some, but just sent a weather update over, and we're going to get to that coming up here fairly soon. So we will do that in a minute. But so that's my take on this. Again, is it the gun that shot people or is it the person? Clearly, it was a disturbed person. And I will say again what I've said many times, never has a gun got up off of the shelf or out of the gun locker and shot somebody on its own. It always requires someone to pull the trigger. And I think we are all getting really tired of these stories where it's someone who is mentally deranged who's taking out people. And in this case, we need to have an honest conversation when you're shooting your own children. And that's exactly what happened here. Steve Alsham Show continues right after this. I am a simple man. I easily get confused on certain things. And when I do, I like to call smart people and come in and say, I don't get it. Help me understand. And I'm thankful to have so many good friends that are willing to do that, including our next guest, Jeff Bradall from Bradall and Associates. He is a prominent local defense attorney, and he's my legal beagle. So when I need some legal interpretation or try to understand something, I say, Jeff, help me out. And he comes to the rescue as he did today. One of the hockey guys, if you listen to the show on WDAY radio on weekends, he is one of the hockey guys as well, former UND hockey player and a great friend of mine. And buddy, you look great. Every time I see you, it looks like you lost another 20 pounds. Look at you.
Yeah, you blush. I blush every time you say that. Thank you so much.
No, you look great. I'm so happy for you. You look fantastic. Way to go. All right, let's get to it. Joshua Height has been accused of murder of Isadora Wengel, the 25-year-old West Fargo woman, basically disappeared right around New Year's Eve. They have found enough evidence to charge Height with the murder of his former girlfriend, but they don't have the body. There is another search going on today. They're going to be searching down in Battle Lake. They must feel like there's a possibility that her body was taken there. They have used the word dismemberment in the charging documents here, and police have used that term, and they're looking for a 27-gallon plastic tote. It's a horrific story. It's a horrific story. So, Mr. Bradall, counselor, may I approach the bench and say I am confused about why the judge in this case on Friday would have allowed bail of any kind. Bail was set at $5 million, and there was an opportunity for bail. I actually don't know if he made bail or not, but as I look at this particular crime, they're saying they've got saw blades with blood and bone fragments on them. They've charged him with murder, and the judge says, yeah, I think we should give you the opportunity to walk around with the free people once again. This makes no sense to me. Help me understand.
Well, I think it's simple and in many aspects. Mr. Hallstrom. All right, first, we want to give our sincere condolences to the family of Isidore Dora Wengel. We have to keep her and her family at the forefront of our thoughts. All right.
Yep.
The Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution assures everybody the right to reasonable bail. Okay?
Okay.
Now, not everybody
yep.
is entitled to bail in the federal system. There are certain crimes where there is a huge presumption of detention, number one. And number two, there are some crimes based upon prior crimes of violence or serious drug offenses where one would not be allowed bail. But, and that has been, there's two Supreme Court cases that have interpreted the Eighth Amendment applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment that have said that everyone is entitled to reasonable bail. And then a recent 1987 decision says, you know, the restrictions or the, I would say the brakes, putting the brakes on what is reasonable, is constitutional in those crimes where the presumption of detention shifts to the defendant or the crimes in which bail or release from detention on a pretrial status would not be applicable. Now,
okay, so you said a lot there. Let me try to dumb it down to those of us on the fifth grade level. You're saying that there is constitutional precedent for what the judge allowed to have happen in the courtroom on Friday.
Both federally and also through the North Dakota Constitution, Article 1, Section 6 of the North Dakota Constitution guarantees that all people are bailable by sufficient surety unless there's a capital offense. Here's the reality.
Okay, is this not a capital offense?
Capital offense would be an offense in which you are put to death if convicted. Okay, North Dakota does not have that. That's my interpretation. The judge, in issuing the bail order, did say that this was a capital offense. In simple terms, Steve, look at it this way. If a person is a flight risk, number one, number two, a threat to the community. Those are the two factors that the court looks at in saying what should a reasonable bail be. But there's additional factors under Rule 46 of the North Dakota Rules of Criminal Procedure. Let me give you an example. If someone has been a lifetime resident of Fargo, Cass County, North Dakota, who has significant ties, has been working, has family, owns property, and the charge is driving under suspension with no prior criminal history, which is another factor, okay? The court is going to say, what is the chance of that person being a flight risk? So the court would either, and the court has several options to look
at. And you mean the judge when you say the court, correct?
That is correct, the judge.
All right.
Now, in that simple fact pattern, the court can say, listen, we're going to give you a $500 bond, all personal recognizance, which means, hey, you just sign a piece of paper that says if you don't show up for your court hearing and abide by the court orders of conditions of release, which are typically no alcohol, no drugs unless prescribed by a physician, can own or possess firearms, continue your employment, and if there's some mental health issues or drug addiction issues, to go obtain those evaluations and follow through with the recommendations. A court can also do a curfew issue, and that's what typically happens. So the court can say, listen, in the height case, the judge said $5 million cash. Now, I suspect height could not come up with probably $10,000 cash. So in all practicality, Steve, when the court said $5 million cash, that is an amount that would be very common for a case like this. It's been $1 million, $2 million. This is the highest that I've seen at $5 million, but the facts of this case, as alleged, are really egregious,
okay.
Right?
Okay, so let me stop you there, just because if I don't ask you my questions, you're going to lose me on everything else you say, because a couple things I need to understand. So you said it's $5 million cash, so I thought it was a deal where you post 10% on a bond and you can get out, but you're saying Height has to hand $5 million in cash over to the court in order to be out.
100%.
Okay.
That was the order in this case.
Okay.
Now, the court also has the option of saying, instead of a 100% cash,
mm-hmm.
We're going to do a $5 million surety, which is the 10%. The court did not do that.
Okay.
So the court can do 100% cash, can do surety, can do an amount of 10%, which the defendant would have to post the 10% to the court. The 10% when it's cash or bail, the bail or surety, the bail would go to 10% would go to the bondsman.
Okay.
Or the 10% would go to the court or personal recognizance.
Got it. You said a couple minutes ago that the judge can do the bail thing if it's reasonable and the person is not considered a flight risk or a risk to others. How could you, I get it, the $5 million probably means, but how would you as a judge even open the door? I mean, who knows? The guy scrapes together $5 million and he's out running around. He's got to be considered a flight risk. He's got to be considered a danger to others. If he did this to what they're charging him with, and again, innocent until presumed, found guilty, I get all of that. But why would a judge even allow for the possibility of this?
Well, you have to take it. Yeah, you mentioned it in answering or asking me the question. Everyone is presumed innocent of the crime in which they're charged with. And everyone is entitled to reasonable bail. Those are the fundamental principles of the federal constitution, state constitution, your rights, my rights, everybody listening right.
But you hear all
Joshua
the time
Height.
That the judge denied bail. You hear that. The judge denied bail in this case. So why are some judges doing and others are not?
I have never seen in North Dakota where the court denies bail in state court.
Oh, is that right?
The court.
Never.
Okay. I have not in 37 years.
Oh, okay.
Now, in federal court, it happens more often than not in certain cases in which there's a 10-year minimum mandatory certifiable offenses, career offenders. You talk about prior certifiable offenses. And in those cases, there's a huge presumption that the defendant has to overcome that the law says that detention during the pretrial process is what should happen. But North Dakota doesn't have that presumption. North Dakota's Rule 46 of the criminal procedures, in my opinion, follows the Eighth Amendment, which says everyone is entitled to reasonable bail. However, the court can look at the strengths and weaknesses of the state's case, again, those factors, prior criminal record, and, you know, the length and time, and the court can come up with what is the judge thinks is reasonable in the circumstances. Now, in a case like this, where someone's accused of a horrific crime, the court's going to jack up the bail and make it cash.
Yeah.
And in all reality, the Eighth Amendment is followed because the defendant is granted bail. However, the bail amount is so much that in all practicality,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
I get that. Did you remember the Jerusha Dean and Alfonso Rodriguez? Was he allowed to make bail in that case? Do you remember that case, Jeff?
I do. And under the federal statutes and under the federal law, you go through the Fifth, you go through the Sixth, you go through the Eighth, the presumption of innocence, the Eighth Amendment right to reasonable bail, and then you go to the specific statute which says, okay, if you're charged with this crime, there's a presumption that you're going to be detained. And that's how you weave your way around the roadmap, so okay. to speak. And
so the charges were different in that case than what we're seeing here.
I would say the charges were not different. The applicable law was different under the federal statutes, and the presumption
that was a federal case
were
okay.
that the shifts to the defendant
yeah.
to overcome that presumption.
Gotcha. Jeff, super helpful. Thanks for coming by. You helped clear that up, and I could not figure out in my reasonable mind what was going on, so thank you for coming by.
Well, this
man.
Is complicated. There's no doubt about it when you mix federal and you mix state and where you're at and the rules and everyone's constitutional. So I can understand the confusion, but in all practicality, the amount of $5 million is not attainable by, frankly, almost any defendant.
Good stuff. Appreciate you stopping by, Jeff. Thanks so much. When we come back on the Steve Holsham Show, they had a school walkout yesterday in Burnsville. "I hate ice," they chanted. This was a middle school. What's going on here? That story next. 49 past the hour, wherever you are listening to me from today. Well, I guess I can't say that, because you might be on a beach somewhere in Florida listening on the mobile app. If you're listening on the radio, pretty good chance that you've been hearing about this winter storm that's headed our way. How bad will it be, and where will it hit the hardest? Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki put together a little special report for us. Dino, take it away.
Steve, we are looking at the calm before the storm today. In fact, it's going to be a pretty nice day for this time of the year, with a sunny start to the day, but we'll see clouds increase throughout the day. It's going to turn windy out of the east-southeast, and we'll have highs today in the FM area here. It looks like upper 40s. I wouldn't be surprised to see some areas touch 50. Can you believe it? Now, it will be a little colder in the northern valley, upper 30s to low 40s as clouds increase. Now, we'll see a few showers pull into the area as we head towards evening. So the majority of the day is dry, but we'll see rain showers, maybe even an embedded rumble of thunder possible this evening. Unbelievable. And then that rain will overspread the entire area as we head into the overnight hours. Now, that rain will change to snow from north to south overnight. In the northern valley, let's say up towards Grand Forks, Thief River, Bemidji, those areas, we'll see that rain change to snow by midnight. It looks like about 11 o'clock or midnight. And then in the FM area, that rain will change to snow as we head towards about 4 in the morning or so. And then that will spread further south. We'll drop off into the low 30s tonight with windy conditions out of the southeast. Area-wide, we'll see snow on Wednesday. Now, there's going to be a sharp cutoff in the snowfall totals. We're looking at heavy snow in the northern valley, where winter storm watches are in effect. That will more than likely be upgraded to winter storm warnings. Areas along that Highway 2 corridor, about 6 to 12 inches of snow, likely, from Devil's Lake through Grand Forks, Thief River, Bemidji. As you go south along the 200 corridor, we're looking at about 3 to 6 inches of snow. And then as you get towards the FM area and the Lakes Country, we're looking at about 2 to 3 inches. Some spots might pick up 4 inches of snow. And that's, again, mainly during the day on Wednesday. And then a few leftover snow showers Thursday with temps in the 20s, and then we slide off into the teens for highs as we head into the upcoming weekend. So again, this snow system is going to affect mainly the northern valley into northwest Minnesota the hardest. We will see snow in the FM area, but most of that won't come until Wednesday. And again, about 2 to 3 inches of snow, with some spots picking up closer to 4.
Okay, sounds good, Dean. Sounds like something to be watching for. So we'll keep our ears tuned to you. I keep your eyes on the website, am1100theflag.com, and you get Dean's latest information there as well. Every once in a while, I see a story that typically I would gloss over, but I lean into this one and say, what are we doing here? And this is that kind of a story. The social media account Libs of TikTok, you probably have heard of them if you are on our stations or other conservative media at all. It is a a conservative website or conservative social media account, and they typically find areas where people have contradicted themselves. They'll say one thing and then they'll say something later, and they'll match them together. Well, in this case, they don't always do that. In this case, it was one of those kind of one-offs for them. And they posted a short video, about 30 seconds long, of a protest. And it looks like kids outside of a school with signs marching, chanting. And the Libs of TikTok social media account says this. Students at Eagle Ridge Middle School in Minnesota staged an anti-ICE protest, shouting, quote, "We hate ICE." Staff can be seen outside supervising the protest. This school has a 27% math proficiency and a 38% reading proficiency. Your kids are being turned into far-left activists. So I see this video. I've watched it a few times now, and it's nothing special. It's just a bunch of kids shouting, chanting, "We hate ICE." And I imagine a lot of them are there just for peer pressure or just to get out of school for a few minutes. Looks like it was a fairly nice day. But I looked up where Eagle Ridge Middle School is. It's in Burnsville, Minnesota. This is not downtown St. Paul. This is one of those suburbs that's kind of in the immediate ring around the Twin Cities. And, of course, there are proud parents standing on the other side of the street, on the sidewalk, holding their signs, too, in solidarity with their kids. This is Burnsville, Minnesota, and this is a middle school. And I wonder, as I look at this, what was I thinking about when I was in middle school? Probably girls, basketball, maybe the new Def Leppard cassette tape that was coming out. I didn't think about politics. The only ICE I would have known about is the stuff that we're going skating on Saturday at the fairgrounds, outside, by the way. We are creating children who are being turned into, like they say, far-left activists. And look, I don't want to overreact to one march. The kids will try to get out of school for any one thing. But I do wish I knew more about what happened inside the school. How did this protest get organized? Who organized it? What were the teachers saying about it in class? I have my suspicions, but I try to be fair to people in cases like this. The school has a 27% math proficiency, 38% reading. And there are middle schoolers who have been so politically equipped that they are going to go outside and have a statement about law enforcement in this country. And I say to myself, this is why it's going to be really hard to turn Minnesota around. Second hour of the program coming up next. Hour number two of the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Tuesday morning is brought to you in part by Dakota Dental Implant. Are you one of those people that smiles with your mouth closed, ashamed of those teeth and how they look? Maybe you're skipping pictures. When the family gathers for a photo, you kind of hide in the back, hope nobody really sees you. Maybe you don't want to laugh out loud. Maybe you pass on dinner invites. Well, it doesn't have to be your normal anymore. It doesn't have to be that way. A new smile can change everything. Your confidence, your comfort, and your everyday life. It's not just about your teeth. It's about enjoying the time with the people that you love and that you care about without holding back. Feel comfortable smiling again. Making smiles great again is what they're doing over there at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo. Take the first step today. Find out more information. Get in touch with them. Have them do a consultation. They can tell you what can be done and what can't. And most of the time, you're going to love the can. DakotaImplant.com. DakotaImplant.com. 7 past the hour here, hour number 2 of the show. Hit a couple of texts before we get to the key 3. First text comes in, says, "Steve, it seems to me and many others that the issue of mental health and gun violence go hand in hand. But lately it seems the media has been ignoring the mental health aspect of gun violence when it involves someone in the trans community. Another example of red news versus blue news." Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Well said. "Steve, I know the conservatives will blame transgenderism on this shooting. I think that's the incorrect way of looking at it. This person was obviously disturbed if they were going to shoot their family in a public place. I find it interesting that this is the only issue the conservatives and liberals flip on when it comes to gun rights. Conservatives will want to take guns away from transgender people. It was Charlie Kirk's last crusade. Oh, there's a lot there. You know, it's not just that conservatives, and again, conservatives, there can be a million different positions under the tent, right? But I don't think most that would call themselves conservative, I certainly think I know this audience well enough to speak on this. I don't think most of us would say we think it's just transgenders who are doing the shootings. That's not what I am saying. If you're picking that up, then I need to be more clear about that. I think that the point that I am trying to make, and that many on my side are trying to make, is that we have been told for too long that you are a hateful something or another if you want to talk about gender dysphoria, transgenderism, whatever, as something that should be at least part of the conversation when you're talking about gun violence. Obviously, everybody who pulls a trigger and kills people is mentally ill in some way. We understand that. But we have been lectured and shamed and told to sit down and shut up, and you cannot raise your hand and you cannot ask any questions. If you want to say, okay, we're being told that being transgender is just a natural thing. It's how God made some people, and we shouldn't look down on that. We should encourage it. Everybody should be a transgender. Let's do a little bit of it every Friday afternoon. And some of us are going, wait a minute now. If you are going through this, I don't know if I'm a boy or a girl, man or a woman. You clearly have some things going on. But it was kind of like COVID when we couldn't say that out loud. Or your whatever name they want to throw at you. And in much the same way that most of us now say, call me a racist. I don't care. You can now call me mean-spirited toward the transgender people if you want to say that, and I don't care anymore about that either. And with every passing shooting that happens with someone who is a biological male who's now decided to be a female, we say, look, we cannot continue to tell these people that what you're doing is normal. And we certainly shouldn't be encouraging our youngest children to say, yes, this is what you want to do. Because when you do those things, you open up Pandora's box of all the things that go along with it. And you have a lot of dominoes that can fall after that. So it is not the only issue that conservatives are talking about with gun safety and gun crime or whatever you want to call it. But I will say what I have said always, that a gun has never got up off of a shelf or out of a gun locker and shot anybody. And liberals want to talk only about the gun. And again, I'm hyper-generalizing here too, and that's not accurate, but I would say most are saying you can't ask questions about the people. That doesn't matter. All that matters is if the gun was available. So that's what I think I'm trying to say, but I appreciate your comment on that. And hopefully that helps clear up at least a little bit of what I think about it. And I think I speak for a few. Steve, would you read Trump's Truth Social post, if you can, about Jesse Jackson? Okay, I sure can. It says here on the post that I am reading, oh, that only gives me part of it. Let me get the whole thing here. Can I call up this whole thing? I can't. I found it on X, and it was a very nice statement from the president. Okay, here's the whole thing. President Trump today at earlier day. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is dead at 84. I knew him well long before becoming president. He was a good man with lots of personality, grit, and street smarts. He was very gregarious, someone who truly loved people. Despite the fact that I am falsely and consistently called a racist by the scoundrels and lunatics on the radical left, Democrats, all, it was my pleasure to help Jesse along the way. I provided office space for him and his Rainbow Coalition for years in the Trump building at 40 Wall Street, responded to his request for help in getting criminal justice reform passed and signed when no other president would even try, single-handedly pushed and passed long-term funding for historically black colleges and universities, responded to Jesse's support for Opportunity Zones, the single most successful economic development package yet approved for black businessmen and women, and much more. Of course, the president had to put in his list of accomplishments there, but that's how he is, and he's not wrong. Jesse continues and finishes by saying, Jesse was a force of nature like few others before him. He had much to do with the election without acknowledgement or credit of Barack Hussein Obama, a man who Jesse could not stand. He loved his family greatly, and to them I send my deepest sympathies and condolences. Jesse will be missed, President Donald J. Trump. Typical Trump, but you know what? That's the kind of post that I think people like me look at and say, well done, Mr. President. You can be yourself. You can express your personality. I get it. You're making a little bit about you, but we'll take that compared to some of the other things that we've seen over the years. All right, key three today. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We do this in the first block of the 10 o'clock hour each day. The latest IRS tax filing data has been released by the agency, and Americans are receiving larger refunds than last year, but they're filing at a slower pace. The average tax refund was $2,290. That's a 10.9% increase from last year's tax filing season, but only 7.4 million refunds have been issued, and that's down about 8% from the same time last year when there were a little over 8 million that had been filed. So maybe it's taken people a little longer to get everything wrapped up there. Story number two, a report from the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank says that 52% of new college graduates are starting out in their professional careers after college underemployed. Now, underemployed does not mean unemployed. These are just people that are working at Chipotle instead of, you know, working at the accounting firm or something like that. 52% after 1 year are underemployed. I did not realize the number was that high. Not always easy to be a college grad. If you're like an engineer or somebody like that, I suppose your odds are a little bit better. But there's a lot of, you know, liberal arts, social studies, and it's hard to find those jobs right now. Very interesting. By the way, this study goes on to say that the first job that you get is the strongest predictor of your career path, typically. But maybe things are going to be different right now. Those who don't land that right job immediately after college often struggle to pivot later. So there you go. Thought that was interesting as well. And one more here for you today. Goldman Sachs is reportedly planning to remove gender, race, and sexual orientation as a specific criteria for its board candidates, according to the Wall Street Journal. The bank's decision follows a private agreement with a conservative activist group and reflects a broader corporate shift away from DEI policies under pressure from current federal executive orders. This move marks one of the most significant retreats by a major financial institution from the social metric hiring practices of the last decade. Isn't that interesting? More and more. And to them I say, if it was such a good idea then, why is it not such a good idea now? The problem is so much of that wasn't a good idea back then. Just did it because they felt like they had to. And now people are saying, you know, we've kind of got off on the wrong foot. Let's do this a little differently. And those are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We call it the key three. When we come back on the program, the best thing I heard all day, Tom Homan dropping bombs on Fox News Channel about the number of children that have been found. Every week at this time, we get a little smarter thanks to our friend Chris Buckingham at Solve CXO. And he shines so much light on business processes and how to make all the tools within your office work better. And it's heavy-duty stuff. We kind of get into some of the high-level storylines here, but if you want to talk to Chris, very easy to do that. Go to solvecxo.com, find out more about them. Hey, Chris, how are you today?
Good morning, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
Yeah, well, we appreciate the opportunity to learn. So you have told me before you work with a lot of business owners that feel just kind of stuck sometimes. What are the common themes you think that lead to that?
Yeah, most owners, and I experienced this early on with when I had my other businesses, you become the operating system of the business. Every decision, every process, every critical function has to run through you. So you become the bottleneck, and this creates a really serious problem when it comes to how your company is valued.
So that becomes a problem when you want to sell your business or maybe retire then, right?
Absolutely. And when somebody is looking to buy and evaluate the business, they're looking at all of the risk, not just the bottom line. And if everything depends on you, that is a massive risk. And they see the owner-operator, owner-dependent business not something that's scalable, and it really gets discounted significantly because it can't transfer the value without you being there.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, how do you fix that then?
You have to shift. You have to become a business that is operating on its own system and building an operating system that is not you as the owner. So documenting processes, clear roles and accountability, a team that's empowered to execute without you, that is what builds operational excellence, and that is what transforms how buyers see and value your business.
Well, that sounds like something that could take a long time. How fast can a change like that be made?
You know, some of the easy gaps can be addressed in 30 to 90 days with just some really focused effort on that.
Oh.
We've got the webinar hosting a seminar in person or online on March 3rd called The Hidden Drivers of Business Value. It's a free brown bag lunch and learn, and we just help show owner operators exactly how the operational excellence and the other factors of that evaluation, the things that they can do to build that. And it's really easy to register off the solvecxo.com website.
Okay, solvecxo.com. Sounds like a great opportunity to learn a little bit more. Chris, thanks for sharing the details with us today. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Take care. Thanks so much. Chris Buckingham, he is the boss man there. I call him a vision to action leader at SolveCXO. 1023 coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. That's the website for Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. All right, it's time now for the best thing I heard all day. And for this one, I give you something that actually happened on Sunday. I heard it yesterday. So best thing I heard all day yesterday was Tom Homan, President Trump's border czar, who was on the Fox and Friends morning show on Sunday morning. And he dropped a number in his conversation that should make every one of us very thankful that we've got the administration in place that we do. He first of all started talking about how many unaccompanied children they found in the Minnesota sweep. You and I talked about this yesterday because that number came out over the weekend, more than 3,300 children. And he takes that point and builds on it from there.
Over 3,300 children. You know, last administration, over 500,000 children smuggled in this country, released to unvetted sponsors. They lost track of 300,000 of them. President Trump has already found 145,000 of them. In Minnesota alone, over 3,300 missing children we found.
Did you hear that number? 145,000 since President Trump took office again.
That the last administration wasn't even looking for.
And the last administration wasn't even looking for them. Now, the 3,300 number in itself is extremely impressive. But when Homan updated that number, I had not heard that number before. This is nationwide, how many, what they call undocumented children, were there, unaccompanied undocumented children. That means kids that had been abandoned in some way or shape. I don't know how many of the 145,000 were being smuggled or trafficked, but it's more than one. I think we're pretty safe to say that. So I sometimes, when it comes to numbers, like to give you some comparisons so that you can put this into context. Okay, so let's visualize what 145,000. Again, this would be a major story if the number was one. They found one kid, one life, right? If we can save one child, we hear this all the time, right? There are about 125,000 children who attend K-12 public schools in North Dakota every day. This means federal agents have found enough unaccompanied children to fill every single school desk in the entire state of North Dakota with 20,000 left over. The population of Fargo is about 145,000, 141,434. Federal agents have found more children than there are residents in the city of Fargo. Imagine every single house, apartment, and office building in the city of Fargo. Close your eyes and visualize if you need to. From downtown to the southern edge, over the river, over to where it's hard to figure out where West Fargo starts and Fargo ends, right? Now imagine every person living in that area was a child who was previously lost in the federal system. That is the scale that Tom Homan is talking about. I got one more for you. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 145,000 is equal to several entire professional sectors in the U.S., including agricultural workers. There are about 151,000 people, according to the Census Bureau, who are working in the farming, fishing, and forestry occupations nationwide. That's a mind blow right there. 145,000. If you needed nothing else to say thank you, Jesus, that Donald Trump is the president of this country, you've got one right there. And as Homan so eloquently stated, and Homan's not a guy that is going to get into the political bashing a whole lot, but as Homan said, the Biden administration, they weren't even looking. Why would they? That doesn't fit the narrative. We want to make sure that we have as much of this going on in our country as possible. It's the best thing I heard all day when I heard that number, 145,000. So whether you want to talk about kids in North Dakota, whether you want to talk population in Fargo, or all the farm workers and the, what, fishing and forestry occupations, that's crazy when you think about that. So I just thought you'd find that interesting as well, because I certainly did.
The email box has been hopping this morning. You can send an email in, studio@flagfamily.com, studio@flagfamily.com. You can also text us at 701-237-1590, 701-237-1590. And you can call the old-fashioned way, the way we used to do it before we had all these fancy tools, 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. An entire family apparently emails. Didn't know you could do that. But the Knicks from Fergus Falls say, Steve, we're so happy to have you on during this time slot. I still maintain it was a great move. Gosh darn it, have become our favorite words. Thanks again. I was not aware that I am a regular frequent flyer on the gosh darn it's, but I'm that sounds like me. So I thank you. By the way, the guy who used to be in this time slot still does a pretty darn good show from 11 to 2, but I appreciate the kind words. We're hoping that we can give you all kinds of good stuff as the day goes on here on the radio or the mobile app, the smart speaker on the computer, however you like to listen to us. And emailer Chad said, Steve, I have a question that nobody will answer. Well, you know to get me involved when you say that, right? I love a good challenging question. Okay, so here we go. If ICE is indeed a rogue agency, why did the city of Minneapolis send the citizens to rein them in? If that street needed to be blocked, why wasn't it a police car instead of that poor woman? Why wasn't it a police officer helping that woman out instead of Alex Pretty? I watched the videos and haven't seen a single local police officer. Also, how can they sue the federal government when they didn't protect the people? These questions need answers. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Chad. Well, I've got a guest that can maybe help me tackle a little bit of that. Alex Balazs is here, and Alex running for Congress. He's in the Republican primary, and so the election season starts early with the primary going on here, and Alex has been kind enough to stop by and share a little bit of time with us. Our first chance to have him on the Steve Hallstrom Show since he announced that he was going to run again. Alex, welcome. Great to see you again.
Thanks for having me down. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to see you. Okay, so let's help Chad out here. So if ICE is a rogue agency, why did the city of Minneapolis send citizens to rein them in?
Yeah, that's just a narrative that the left is going to want to use and layer on top of this. What it was a failure of the mayor and the governor and the rest of those politicians when they stopped their police forces, the local and sheriffs and state police, from actually assisting ICE and supporting them. They caused that problem. And they're not going to own up to that, but that's the reality. And then, of course, citizens went out there who got talked into going in front of ICE, and whoever did that, I mean, there was some foreign involvement, I'm sure, out of state for sure, and they didn't need to be there. And if the local officials had at least stepped up, followed 287G, everybody can read about it, an agreement with ICE to take those people when they're in detention, and they wouldn't have had to have those tactical forces on the street. And yeah. People should really understand that. It could have been a simple law enforcement matter. None of that had to happen.
It's amazing, and it's just one part of a systemic issue that we've seen in that wonderful state. I grew up there. Went to school there, still love going back. But what has happened in Minnesota, Alex, it's just, and I know we're talking about North Dakota here with you,
sure.
But how do you think a state falls apart the way Minnesota has? How did it begin?
Well, I think those are politicians, and not being a politician, I get to say this, taking advantage of people. I think there's a bunch of people over there in Minnesota who would like ICE to come in and pick up those people.
Oh, 100%.
And just take care of the business. But a very few got run by those politicians who wanted their day in the sun. They wanted to make their money. They wanted that power. And that's just wrong. And I would say to all those people, keep your voices out there. You can change this, and it will improve your neighborhoods. Those pedophiles that they're picking up, those murderers, that makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I might disagree a little with emailer Chad talking about that poor woman. I too feel badly that she was shot and killed. Nobody likes to see that happen, but that quote-unquote poor woman made a choice. And in an adult world, you make bad choices and bad things can happen.
Yeah, I think that for whatever reason, somebody talked her into going and she thought it was a good idea to do that. But at that point, when you're getting in front of law enforcement and law enforcement has a duty to do, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about your race. You're back in for Congress here in North Dakota. You gave it a try last year, came up a little short in the primary, although you did get the nomination from the party at the convention.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So you're back and give it another go. Tell me what made you want to get back in the mix.
Well, I wanted to stay in it because, first of all, I don't think I'm getting everything I want as a North Dakotan from my congressional representative. So I want more. And if I was talking to North Dakotans, I would say you can have more, because when you send an experienced person to Washington who knows how to deal with these things, who has a little more depth and breadth, you're going to get your bang for your buck. And that's critically important. You talked about the kids. Can I go back there for a minute? On
please.
This one kid would matter. I mean, and the fact that we have so many, and I got to ask this last year in Milner, and they said, where are these kids going? I said, let me just be honest with you. The cartels send them here. Some of them are sold for sex. Some of them are sold for labor. And honestly, probably some of them are cut up for their body parts, because there's a market in that. That's just the tragedy of it. And that was going on. And you said it, and you're right. They did nothing. Home is right. They did nothing about it that whole time. Now we're changing that. So what difference could I make in Washington? Okay, I've got the experience. I was on the board. I've worked with ICE. I've worked with CBP. I've coordinated with the different agencies. I mean, I still know those guys. So it makes a difference when you go back there to get the job done that you can actually talk to them at their level and know what their operations are like.
For those that aren't familiar with your story, you've got an extensive military background. Talk about that.
Yeah, I went to the Air Force to start with. Then I moved over to the Navy, got some more training. I was a survival instructor. After about a little over 11 years, I joined the National Guard in Colorado. I was kind of going to be done, tested for the Foreign Service. 1990, went back and worked for the Foreign Service. At that point, I joined the Reserves at the same time, Army Reserves. And I deployed and worked with them for another 13 years and retired after 23 years from the military. Finished in the State Department after Nicaragua, Bolivia, The Hague, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, a bunch of places in the Middle East in 2014, and retired to the farm with Cindy.
Other than that, you haven't really done much for the country. Yeah, I wish you could get off your rear end and do something. So having a little fun with you there. Okay, so tell me, how does all of that help you if you do get elected and hit the ground running in D.C.?
Yeah, the bottom line is you can't start in any discussion from zero and hope to learn from the colleagues around it if your experience is North Dakota. And so respectfully, I would say this. There are public officials in North Dakota that are fantastic for their jobs, and I've met them. Some of the senators, they're fantastic. The daily workers, the guys I meet on the street, they do a fantastic job here, better than I could do. But if you want to send somebody who's really good at doing it in Washington, you pick the most experienced person. You're not going to pick a quarterback who can't play or only played on a couple times. And that difference is that I'm really good for that job. I probably wouldn't be as good for some jobs here in North Dakota.
Tell me about your assessment of the job that Congresswoman Fedorchuk has done. You've said on this program that you were concerned on some of the votes that she missed. I actually asked her her sort of response on that. She said 10 votes that I missed, and it was when my daughter was getting married, and I talked to the party leadership and said, hey, is it going to be okay if I'm not here? And she was given assurances that would be okay. Is that your biggest concern about the congresswoman, or do you feel like there are other things that she's fallen short in the 2 years that she's been there?
Well, it's my biggest concern, but it's one of the concerns, and there's a narrative there we should listen to. I'm not talking to the party representatives in Washington and whether it's okay for me to miss a vote. The people in North Dakota need to know whether it's okay to miss a vote. So if you're going to miss one because of something, you need to come back here and say, hey, listen, I'm not going to be there for this, and it's an important one. Are you okay with that? Because they're the ones you answer to. And in reality, I've missed birthdays too many to speak of with my family and my daughter, and they can testify to this. You're going to miss those things. That's just the way it is. We have a kind of saying in my family, you know, if you tell me afterwards, it's an excuse. If you tell me before, it's a reason. So I know that those missed votes can be defended, but the reality is that there's other things going on, and that includes waiting to vote until the water's right. And I don't agree with that. We should be upfront putting single-issue bills in. ahead of time. We should be leading. There's one congressional representative for North Dakota. We should be out front of everybody. We're leading in ag. We're almost leading in energy in the United States. We ought to have a representative who's leading back there.
How do you think President Trump is doing in his second term?
No, I think he's doing great. There are so many good things going on that we're changing. I think 6-8 months from now, we're going to see a turnaround in this, that we're really seeing the numbers come together now. It needed some time for the bill to come through, for tax rates to come through. And we were underwater from the Biden administration, so I think it's going really well.
Tell me a little bit about what issues you hear about mostly as you travel around North Dakota, and you're getting an earlier start this time than you did last time, and people know you from the convention 2 years ago, the nomination from the party 2 years ago. I'm guessing that some more warmer handshakes and, hey, I remember you from a couple of years ago. But yeah, what are people talking about? What are they worried about here?
Well, they're worried about spending. Obviously, that's a big one in the budget. They don't want to see the omnibus bills anymore. They want single-issue bills. That's still a big deal. And the reason that is because it cuts costs when you do single-issue bills. So that's tied right to the budget. They want limited government back in D.C. They want us to do the things right and get those things done that the federal government is supposed to do, like get our defense spending done, get those things right. They want a balanced budget. Everyone's talking about it. They'd like us, the federal government, to step out of North Dakota and states and let the states run it, but still facilitate so the states can do it. Like, for example, I think we're going to have to federal rule or federal law that starts to limit foreign ownership of critical national interest land and national interest businesses. And when you do that at the federal level, then the states can step in and say, hey, there's a federal law. You can't own this. And we don't have that right now. I think we need more of that.
Yeah. Farmland is one we think of.
Yep.
Some of our ag processing, we think about that as well. I was one that when the president was talking about U.S. Steel being sold to Nippon, he said, no, we're not going to. And part of me as a free market guy was like, hey, we want our government to stay out of business decisions. But there are some that rise to a level where you say, you know what? It is probably in our nation's best interest to not have our biggest steel plant owned by the Japanese. Not that we don't like the Japanese, but they shouldn't own our steel plants.
No, it's exactly right. And it's our job back there to be wise enough and to have enough input on those deals to say, we're not going to do this. And come back and say, listen, we're going to take a U.S. company. You can find U.S. companies to do this. You just got to welcome them in and work with them.
I will say that I get concerned when I see the United States government taking a share of Intel, owning a part of that company. The Trump RX, I get what he's trying to do, but it feels like we're picking winners and losers a little more than I would like to see. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Here's an analogy on this. I think if you step back from it and you enhance these businesses, you work with these businesses, you don't need to step in. I do believe some of this stepping in is because there's a lot of frustration and we're not getting it where we need to be fast enough. So like with ICE, if we had support, we could be way far ahead. Like with these businesses, we could be way down the road if we open the doors for them, pull off the restraints, make it easy for them to do business. And American business leaders and owners and farmers and everybody, they deserve as much as we give foreign owners.
Mm-hmm.
We give them a lot.
Yeah. When we come back with Alex Blas, we'll talk more about some of the issues in North Dakota. We're going to talk about ag issues and how we support our farmers, or what needs to happen, what can the federal government do to help our farmers. I also want to talk to Alex about the Epstein files. I have been maybe against the grain of many of you saying, I get it. I know a lot of people really want to, you know, bury things and make it convenient for the administration here. I want everything out. I'm going to find out where Alex stands on that issue as well when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Don't go away.
Sounds good.
Got a few more minutes left with Alex Blas running for Congress in the Republican primary. Julie Fedorchuk, the incumbent, will be in the mix as well. And we've got on the phone line, Tom has called in on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Tom, what's your question for Alex?
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Alex. You had a kind of a two-part question. Since everything runs on seniority and you don't have a voting record, what kind of committees would you like to get on that would benefit North Dakota? And how would these committees benefit the younger generation, the younger ones, say, from about 18 to about 25 or so?
Okay. Thanks, Tom, for the question. First of all, I think obviously I'd be good on armed services. I'd like to work on that. Foreign affairs would be something I think I could do well on. I think I could do pretty good on energy and ag because those issues really mean just supporting the folks that are out there. And what it means to young kids is that we've got to have somebody up there speaking for them in general, because when you talk about young kids, they're voters and they could be the next people in this office. So what we have to do is we got to pave the way for them to be participants in this political work. and participants in their community. And if they see us doing good up there, then they're going to follow and want to emulate that.
All right, let's go a little rapid fire
here. Yeah, go.
The Epstein files. I want everything out. Yep. I want to be able to look at it and see. I can think for myself. I understand that things can be doctored. But I think the American people are going to need to have all this stuff out there so we can finally put this to rest one way or the other.
100% agreed. It should come out. People can sift through it themselves. If you read everything, you'll probably get where Socrates said, if you give a man all the information, he'll make the right decision. So yep. Why don't we just do that?
I agree with you. Crop prices, tough in North Dakota right yep. now. What should the federal government's role be in finding a way to help our farmers with better crop prices?
Start disengaging from China and figuring how we're going to do these soybeans in another way, whether it's building additional crushing plants or it's the federal government supporting us and finding other markets. But you cannot tie yourself to China and then tell North Dakota soybean growers that it's always going to be a stable market. We're going to have to work better at it.
Don't we need China as
sure.
a buyer?
They can buy it all they want, but we have to find some other places when they want to get it. And we can do that with oil and other things. I've been talking to farmers about this. There's ways to do it.
Okay. Can you win? Can you win the primary? Can you win the general?
Yeah, I can. I'll tell you how. If we get the grassroots vote out there, if people who are listening are going to vote, that makes all the difference. Grassroots beats money all day long. So I'm going to be out there talking to folks. We can get the endorsement at the convention, which is critical, and then we win the primary.
Okay. You put out a video yesterday.
I did.
And it was, I had to laugh. And well, I'll let you explain it. Tell me about what you did in this video, and I'm sure you've gotten some reaction.
I have. We've got a lot of good comments on it. I wanted to wish the president, President Trump, Happy President's Day and congratulate him on all his good work. And I thought that a call would be the best way, but I wasn't going to get through. So I kind of spoofed a call, a little bit of political satire, talking with him. And it was just a great video we put out. And a lot of folks have come back and said.
Where can people see it?
It's on Facebook. And you can see it, Alex Balazs for Congress.
Okay.
It's up there, and I'd like your comment on it. Get back to me. And President Trump, if you're listening, you can call anytime. My phone, I'd be happy to talk for real. So,
how are you doing raising money? You said grassroots beats money every time, but in this world, you need a little bit of it. How are you doing?
You know, it's been so amazing that people have handed us checks for $100 or $20 or $50. And I want to say to everybody out there, that matters. I know what 50 bucks is like when you're working. I really remember that really well. And it still matters to me because Cindy only gives me 20 bucks a week.
Hmm.
So we're getting donations in, and it's adding up.
Okay. Do you expect to get the nomination at the convention again?
I won't say expect. I say I'm going to work really hard for it. I'm going to do everything I can to get that nomination because expect means like I'm taking it for granted. I'm going to bust my butt for it.
Is there anybody else who's declared besides yourself and the congresswoman?
Not yet.
As far as we know, a lot of people are talking about it. You mentioned to me that you had a little bit of an announcement to make today.
I do. I have an announcement, and I'm going to invite you to this. I hope you'll be part of it. I am spearheading, and we're working with a whole bunch of people together to have the Save the Date at the Bismarck Capitol in North Dakota, 17 May at noon. We will do the rededication for One Nation Under God for North Dakota. They're going to do this in Washington, D.C. on the Mall, I think the same day. They're going to announce it pretty soon. We're going to do it here in North Dakota. So we're working with some churches. We're working with some senators that are very Christian. And we are going to get out there and say what's important, put God first. And we're working on all the permits and the rest of the stuff. But I'm inviting everybody. 17 May, we'll have a flyer out on it. And let's get this back and dedicate ourselves to One Nation Under God.
A good military man. 17 May at what?
1,200.
1,400 yeah. hours?
Noon, 12 o'clock. Yeah, 12 o'clock.
1,200 hours.
Yeah.
And so this is something that's been happening in the past? Is this a big deal? I don't know that I've heard of it.
It hasn't. They just started talking about it in D.C. Trump wants to do it on the Mall on the 17th. And I said, well, we're gonna jump right on it in North Dakota. We'd probably be the first state to come to it and plan for this.
Okay, very good. Got about 30 seconds left. What do you want to leave for the people?
I want to tell everybody out there to keep the faith. We said this before. God gives us our rights. Politicians and government doesn't. Stay with it. Stay the course. Everything you do good makes a difference. And for everybody out there, you should lean in and help find these kids with ICE. I don't care what political party you're with. You should be part of this effort right now. We can make a big difference. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for doing it. Yeah, website again for people who want to connect.
AlexForNorthDakota.com. And you can donate or set something up or talk to me. Send me a message.
Okay, very good. Well, that'll do it for our program today. Thank you to Alex for being with us here. Thanks to Jeff Bradall for joining us as well, talking about that crazy case here in Fargo as well. And I want to say thanks to you for being a part of the show with me here today. It's an honor and it's a privilege. I do not take it lightly. Thank you very much for being here. Stay tuned. Scott Henin and the What's on Your Mind radio program coming up next. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.